Blog Talk.
I hear that music playing, I start thinking about the listen. Yeah, my bad head. Got a lot of bad habits here. One of yours is listening to the Norman Knight Show, and I hope you keep that bad habit for the rest of your life. Well, anyway, speaking of bad habits, my wife always used to say, you know, one of the bad habits I had was books. And so that's what I want to talk about tonight, the whole idea of a book. I have been with books since ever I can remember, I even had books before I was five, but I remember learning to read and that magical world being unlocked, you know, and here I am, some people say I'm a school teacher, I guess I am, and so books have always been a great big part of my life. You know, a book's really kind of really a neat thing. I'm holding one here in my hand by, I don't know if any of you have read any Umberto Eco, but I'm actually holding a copy of his novel, Baudolino, which, the name of the rose is Eco's big novel. And actually, starting to read Eco is what really got me interested in semiotics or the study of symbols. And I like reading Eco's novels. I really do. But one thing, remember now, if you're out there and you want to give me a call at 347-945-6713. Why, you can give me a call and you can chime right in here. I got four lines open right now. That's 347-945-6713. And you can talk to me about books or anything you want. But I'd really like to start the night off with books. And in fact, our favorite books. Everybody knows that Norm's a big computer geek. I mean, after all, I'm right here on the Norm at Night Show. You know, it's all done on the computer. I love computer communications. But I'm a creature of the book. This computer, it's a new thing for me. I speak with the accent of one of the Gutenberg Galaxy. Now, there's a great book for you. Marshall McLuhan's Gutenberg Galaxy. I believe that if you're going to have any hope of what's happening to us out here in the world, you have to go read the Gutenberg Galaxy. It's kind of a really heavy book, but I remember reading it way back in my 19th year. My God, that's 40 years ago. I read Gutenberg Galaxy. God, I wish I could remember that professor's name. Gutenberg Galaxy, Theodore Roszak's, what was the name of The Wasteland? Something The Wasteland, Roszak's book. Return from now, that's not it. The Wasteland Return, no. Anybody out there, if you remember the name of Where the Wasteland Ends, there it is, or if I'm wrong on that, why don't you give me a call at 347-945-6713. You can be the Google jock if you would. Well, anyway, I've always liked books. Oh, I got my coffee here tonight, so I'm really enjoying it. But anyway, if you want to call in, join the chat session, rumor has it I'm not going to have one of my usual chat session guys tonight, but that's okay, you know. He'll hopefully pick up the archive tomorrow. Oh, wait a minute, let me just... Norm is in the house. I put that up in the chat room. God, I think I put it up. What the hell's going on? Oh, there we go. Yeah. Well, anyway, let me get back to the switchboard here. And I guess I'll start the conversation off. Oh, I got a call coming in here. Hold on a minute. Go ahead, 513. You're on with Norm at Night. It's book night tonight.
Norman?
Go ahead. Yeah, 513, you're on the line.
This is Cousin Kevin. What's going on tonight?
Oh, my God. My Cousin Kevin, well...
Yeah, I heard about this. What's the topic?
Well, the topic tonight is great books.
Ah.
And so we're just talking about books because everybody knows that... or everybody thinks that Norman is a computer geek, and I am. There's no question about that. But I love the, I don't know how to explain it, the whole idea of sitting down with a book and having a conversation with the author.
Huh.
And it's a conversation that you can have time after time after time. And I just love doing it.
I do too, Norman, but I haven't done much of it lately.
Well, you know what? We need to do more. Because, no, I agree 100%. You know, I just had my birthday on Sunday. I was 59. And one of the gifts that I got was Dan Brown's new book, The Lost Symbol. And
what's
I just
that
want
about?
To, well, it's actually about the Masons in Washington, D.C. and the founding of the country.
Huh.
He's the same guy that wrote The Da Vinci Code.
I see.
And this is his new book, and I just sort of curled up in a chair with it, and you know, I knocked off about 6 chapters, and it was really an interesting feeling.
Did you decide it was a great book?
I've decided that I'm going to read 6 more chapters, that's for sure. The thing I liked really about it is that it's set in Washington, D.C., and that's the general vicinity of my life for the last 25 years. But there's addresses and phone numbers and things. And so I'm going to go into the district and see what's at some of the addresses that appear in this book.
What's the time frame of the book?
It's right now.
Oh, it's current.
Oh, yes, it's, well, you know, there's all those rumors about the Masons and the conspiracy of the founding of the country, and I'm really kind of interested in semiotics, and the hero of the book's a symbolist, and it's really great fun. And although most people speak about the Da Vinci Code, hold on one second. I just want to bring one more caller into here. Go ahead, 206. You're on with us.
You're a fan of the Da Vinci Code?
Oh my God, it's like an old family reunion. There's a Cincinnati cousin on 513.
Oh, that's terrific. Hello, Cincinnati cousin. This is your Seattle cousin.
Oh, is that right? Must be his Paul.
Yes, it is. We're having
a family night
tonight.
Why not? We've been getting together the last few nights, days on the internet, talking about Grandma Constantine's meatballs.
That's right. And Norm, you've been absent from the conversation. There must have been a dozen emails easily.
Oh, yeah. We finally, I think, came to a realization of the true recipe, thanks to Harriet and Douglas.
Well, it couldn't have been Harriet.
No, Harriet had Grandma's recipe on a card, supposedly. I'll share it with you.
Cousin Doug got out of his Corvette and gave us the rest. Now, how did I miss all these emails? How am I out of the loop here?
That's a good question. Don't you check your email?
I do.
We were concerned about that.
Oh, wait a minute. I'll bet it's one of the emails because we just had a big email switch at school. Well, the addresses didn't switch, but I've just been buried in trying to get this whole thing out of just running. People, they don't change very well. They just don't change very well.
Some of the emails went to your Buffnet account.
Okay, well, I haven't checked. Okay, I will get on the stick. But Grandma Constantine's meatballs were the best.
The greatest. You and we've been searching
for none.
Yeah. Well, I think we've got the recipe. We pooled our knowledge and we came up with it.
Oh. Well,
we ruled out a few ingredients. I think we ruled out the Worcestershire sauce.
Yeah. Well, people don't understand my mother fully. That was her idea.
The Americanization of Jesse.
That's right. It was right. I mean, that was such a preposterous ingredient.
I tell my students, your mother. I tell my students how my grandfather came from Italy on a boat, not speaking a word of English, and every one of his kids graduated from college, and the very first one was a woman. And Aunt Jessie walking down Elmwood Avenue carrying the books to the new Buffalo State.
Yep.
You tell them
that's
story
one of my
favorites. That's at the pool table?
Well, I like my version of the story. I don't know how many, I don't know whether it's true or it's false, but there's truth in it.
Mm-hmm.
But my version of the story, my father was just a crazy, crazy pool fanatic. And I heard this story one night when we were over at Joe Bondanza's and they were playing pool in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, my dad, I'd never seen him pick up a pool cue in his life, and he never let me go to a pool hall. That was one of the things that just would set him off. And I couldn't figure out why, especially he just ran a couple of racks, and then somebody told me the story. They had a pool table in the attic. I don't know if it couldn't have been Lisbon, so it had to be on Norwalk. And Dad was upstairs playing pool, and Aunt Jessie just was furious with him, and she took a bowling ball upstairs, and she told him that if she didn't stop playing pool, she was going to throw the bowling ball through the pool table, and she did it.
Oh, my God. I've never heard that story.
Oh, no, I've heard a variation on it. I heard that it was the coal shovel, and she was very annoyed because pool had distracted your dad and my dad so much from their grades, from school. That their
absolutely,
grades
from studying.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was about.
Yep.
So you heard it was a coal shovel. I heard it was a bowling ball.
What was a bowling ball doing in the house?
I don't know.
Good question.
Were there bowlers in the family, too?
Uncle John bowled.
Well, I'll tell you something.
Yes.
My mother in Seneca Falls used to, she blew a gasket once when she found out that I'd been at a pool hall.
Oh, I'll bet.
I mean, I had no idea where this came from, but she really thought that pool halls were the, were dens of inequity.
Why? It almost ruined her brothers.
So it came from earlier in her career.
Oh, I think, well, actually, if the boys, if the twins were in high school, she would have graduated from college already.
Yeah, she graduated.
Right?
She graduated from college. It would have been probably about 32 or 33.
Right, and so the twins would have been 14 or 15.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. So she hated pool halls. She just hated them.
Right,
and
so and it's
I'm
really amazing.
They had pool halls in Seneca Falls.
Oh, yeah, they were, and they were awful places, you know, with low
yes,
lights.
They
and
were.
People with
but they were.
Cars and cigarettes and all the lowlifes gathered there, and I had a few friends who and we gathered there too a few times. But as soon as
right,
I mentioned
exactly.
it at home, Jesus, everything.
Oh, my father was the same way. And then I never forget. We went in the basement at Joe Bondanza's, and there's a pool table, and they're all playing. And Dad picks up a pool cue, and it's and then the story came out.
Yeah, right. I bet he was pretty good, too, was he?
Yeah, he was. I bet Leonard was, too, because they
yeah.
used to go up in the attic and play all the time.
Great story.
I wonder where they got it.
You know, somebody should actually, you know, talking about great books, that family, our family would be a great, story. It would top 100 years of solitude, that's for sure.
Well, have you read Mario Puzo's The Fortunate Pilgrim?
No, you know, my father, he hated Mario Puzo.
Well, this is a very good book. It's pre The Godfather, and it's about an Italian-American immigrant family in New York City. And it's the strong-willed woman, the mother figure, who holds the family together after losing one husband, marrying a second. The kids, you know, the kids are stealing things out of the coal car. I mean, it's like Buffalo, and it's a very good portrayal. It's a good book, and there's a very strong daughter figure. One of the oldest kids is a daughter, and she's kind of the interface between the family and society. And if you haven't read it, you might enjoy it.
No,
I'll have to take a look at that. So I'll have to look. But my father, when The Godfather first came out, he was incensed about it. Because he says, yeah, they think we're all gangsters.
That's right.
Well, we had a few of them.
But nobody remembers my father, you know, went to work every day of his life on the bus.
But did anybody remind him of the uncle who had the jewelry on the side down in the basement of the barbershop?
You mean Uncle Louie?
Yeah.
Did anybody remind him of Uncle Shorty making books through the door?
My mother, when she tells a story about going to get her engagement ring, my father
uh-huh.
took her to Shorty's, and they went down the basement, and he had a whole trove of rings, and she picked one out.
Really? Well, but Shorty was always sort of a salesman. He was always selling things.
Oh,
I remember he was selling pots and pans, and he was selling plastic Tupperware.
Hey, anybody else out there, 347-945-6713, join in. Tell us some family stories about yourself. Let's make a great book out of our families.
Hey, could be done, I suspect.
You know, I still hate, you know, I always told my, I got to take a tape recorder over to Grandma's and just get her talking. I never did it.
Karen did it.
Yeah. She's got quite a long recording of Grandma's commentary.
Really? So it exists. Oh,
oh yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, Karen did it when Grandma lived in Seneca Falls with Mother.
Okay.
Kevin, do you know if she's done anything to get it off of tape and onto a more permanent
I think it is transcribed. It's in print. It's on paper. I'm pretty sure, but I'll check with Karen. It'd be useful if it's available to circulate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
Well, you know, you want family history? Just check with Cousin Gail. hey, if you're out there listening, why don't you just give us a call from the free state? 347.
Gail started this whole discussion with her query about the ingredients for making meatballs. And yeah. I always got a kick out of the fact she says she never fries anything because it's messy.
Oh, sure.
Gail never fries anything?
Gail never fries anything, she said.
Oh, my God. That was one of the best parts about walking into Grandma's house. You come through the back door and you go up those three back steps and you could just smell the cured meatball pan.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
Down in the basement.
Oh,
hey,
God.
Norman, you want to talk about great books? I was just thinking. I'm about halfway through a book that I think is great. It's about Franklin Roosevelt. It's entitled A Traitor to His Class. Have you read that one?
I have not. A Traitor to His Class. I like that title.
It's a wonderful account of his from his childhood in great detail all the way through his early political career and then through the presidency and the Depression.
Oh, my God. Who's the author?
You guys keep talking. I'll go get it. It's downstairs. I'll be right back. But
no problem. So how's the marathon business there, cousin?
It's good. As a matter of fact, in a few minutes, I'm going to bow out and go for a run. I've got 21 miler to do next weekend, and then once that's done, I'll be tapering off until the race itself.
Okay, and you're running in the Marine Corps, right?
The Marine Corps. I'm coming to your neck of the woods. I'm going to be in your neck of the woods twice in 10 days, actually.
Why? What's the second trip?
Once is work. So that's the week before, and then I fly back. I'm there Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and I fly back, and then I'm flying for the race. I'm flying in on Thursday.
So you come? What are you coming for work for?
Oh, there's a meeting I've got to go to.
Do you have any time?
Well, if I do, I'll let you know. I haven't looked at the schedule yet. If I do, we can get
together
a special edition of Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, that would be a great... Will you be here on a Tuesday?
I won't be there on a Tuesday.
Oh, that's too bad. Well,
work,
we might have to do a special edition. Okay, Kevin,
I'm back.
A traitor
can
to
I ask you
class.
A question, Norman?
Sure.
What's the radio part of this? Why is this called talk radio? It's really a conference call, isn't it?
Well, it's the way I run my show. There could be other callers will come on before we're done here. This is voice over IP.
Well, maybe you should check and see if anybody else is on, or maybe you already know.
Well, I have the board up here. Nobody's in the queue waiting. And the other thing is that this is all going to the archive. And you can go to my blog and actually listen to this recording of this show all week, although you only get it from 9 to 10. Sometimes it gets lively. I should get you going about health care. I haven't talked about health care. I got so tired of it.
Yeah, you want to get going on that, I'm ready. But first let me tell you that the book...
Yeah, what's the author?
The author is someone you probably know. It's H.W. Brands, who has also written a biography of Andrew Jackson, apparently is well thought of.
B-R-A-N-D-S. Okay, yes, okay. I do know that name. Okay, I will...
And I really recommend this book, particularly if you are really interested in the high political skills of FDR and how he put them to use.
Oh, yeah, FDR is one of my favorite people.
Yeah, of course.
Because this year, I'm really lucky. I've got to teach an American government course, and I'm really having a great time with that.
Well, I imagine the students are paying attention this year.
Given
the crisis that we're living through and watching.
That's right, although I'm getting a little disappointed in our president, but that's a whole nother story.
Well,
I promised myself I wasn't going political. What really distresses me, I have to look to the right to see the guy.
Well, he has to be careful. He has to appear to be a man of the center to get anything done.
In my opinion, I've come to love, though I don't like his ideas at all, but I've come to love Joe Scarborough. I really enjoy watching his new show in the morning, Morning Joe.
Oh, I bet that's a luxury I've never enjoyed.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know this one at all.
6 a.m.
Is that a radio show, Norman?
No, it's actually on the radio, but it's on MSNBC. That's their kickoff program in the morning.
I see. Well,
I think he's brilliant. I don't particularly. He's got that new book out. I can't even remember the title of it, but it's on the way to my house because I want to read it. But
does he have anything to say about the proposals and ideas about health care reform that are floating around?
Oh, absolutely he does. Absolutely he does. I don't like what he has to say, but at least he makes reasoned arguments.
Yeah, well,
he doesn't just call us names and, talk about death panels.
Right. But I am disappointed.
But he said, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I agree with you about. I'm disappointed in Obama on the health care reform because I don't think. I think he's trying to avoid really tackling some of the nitty gritty details of how this might be accomplished and what the problems are.
Specifically, he
just briefly alludes to the problem that the medical profession represents. And the over-testing that the doctors engage in on a routine basis for a number of reasons. The Republicans claim it's only because doctors are trying to avoid malpractice suits that they order a lot of marginal or unnecessary tests. But I think the medical culture has just changed dramatically in the last 20 or 30 years, and they've all grown up ordering all these tests, and they think it's the right thing to do. Even though, if you get them in one by one in a hard conversation about what they've just done, they might be willing to concede that it really wasn't necessary to do that. And this is running up huge bills that could be much, much less on a patient or disease by disease basis. And so this is the cost side of the whole problem. And we're not getting much in the way of specifics.
I'm really glad to hear someone talk about that. It's not just health insurance that we need to worry about. It's what we're insuring ourselves about. My real question, and maybe it's simple and naive, if there was no health insurance, would health costs have to come down?
Well, most of us couldn't afford to have health care.
Right.
Never had anything serious. You'd have to make a choice between food and health care.
That's why when you went to the emergency room at Stanford, it was a $10,000 bill.
Charge less or don't eat.
Right. Well, okay. Yeah, the doctors don't have any incentives to keep costs down.
Nobody comes to the... And then the other thing I've always thought about was, why can't we just make more doctors?
Why can't we make more primary care doctors?
Yeah, that's the real question. We need more primary care doctors, and they need to be able to make a decent living.
That's exactly right.
And right now, the payment is very key to procedures, and primary care doctors don't do a lot of procedures. They mainly they listen to patients, they make diagnoses, they manage chronic disease, da 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 da. But those aren't big ticket items in terms of payment. So
maybe they got to drive Chevys instead of Mercedes.
Well, mine drives a Camry.
Most of the primary care doctors drive Chevys, believe me.
I hope. What did Leonard used to drive? Leonard was always my favorite doctor.
The only car Leonard ever had was a 1965 Mustang that my mother almost killed him for buying. Other than that, they were always Chevys and Pontiac.
Right, just regular, normal cars.
Well, I'm sure Emil was the same way.
Well,
Dad
liked big cars.
I'm going to tell you a story about Uncle Emil that I'll never forget. It was right after I got my driver's license. And they came to Buffalo. And he just walks in the house and he says, "Young Norman," he throws me these keys to go and park his Lincoln.
Yeah, right.
Did
he really?
Here was another story about his Lincoln.
To go park my car.
He never did that with me.
Well, he had a Lincoln at one point that hinged, and it hinged kind of reversed. The back door, instead of being hinged.
Right, the back door opened from the front instead of the back.
We were visiting there once, and Aunt Jessie had gotten out of the back seat, and she hadn't closed the car door. And Uncle Emil drove into the garage and took the door out.
I didn't know that.
There was not a lot of laughing in Seneca Falls that night.
I guess they just got it fixed and never broadcast that to the rest of us.
That's right.
If you're out there, 347-945-671. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on, guys. I'm bringing a third into the call. Hey, Colt, go ahead. You're on with the Constantine Cousins and the Bovies.
All Buffalonians?
No.
Originally.
But right now we've got a Cincinnatian, Seattle.
Seattleite.
And then there's me here in Virginia. And you're out in Sacramento.
We're always going to be a Kermit Ave guy.
Who just came on?
Anybody
we know?
No, but it's somebody I've known for years. He goes by the Cult of Reason. That's his name. He Skypes me, so I don't see a phone number.
Cult of Reason, eh?
Cult of Reason.
That's pretty ambitious.
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Just an old friend. He was... worked for the Sacramento Bee for years.
Hmm. Yeah, now I'm an out-of-work newspaper guy.
Like so many of you, that's right. You should see the Cincinnati Inquirer. It's been reduced to about a third of its physical dimensions. And the amount of newsprint is probably reduced by half, and not many advertisements anymore. I don't know how they stay afloat.
Do they have a big online presence?
They've created a very large online presence, and
they
make money with that, though.
Well, there's differing opinions about that. The Washington Post online's become almost torturous to read. Because of all the advertisements that now pop up.
Oh, is that right? Mm.
Yes.
But the papers, they've got to give these pages away now. I would say, let's see, when I worked there, 2006, when I left, we were getting $15,000 for a full-page ad. That same ad now is $4,500.
And some of the advertisers...
Yeah,
I was going to say, some of the advertisers who buy full-page ads now are really bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've been seeing full-page ads for gold coins or whatever else you have lying around the house. Full-page.
They can afford that now. See where
I suppose $1,000 an ounce.
Yeah. And, that's the thing. The quality of the advertising is declining as well. To where you're getting scam artists, like these gold places. And you see it all over, that spammy type advertising on the internet and all that. You're seeing a lot more of that crap.
You know, that's an interesting question. Did newspapers, you know, they always talk about verifying sources. Did they verify the advertising?
I would doubt it.
Yeah, no.
Do they really
don't
care?
If they get enough complaints, then they might. But these days, who says they're, if these guys pay up front, which most of them do, then hey.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, once in a great while we would reject advertising, but it was very rare. Do you ever what was it, John Powers or they had another little scam thing going with child models and all that. And
well, I don't
some
know.
Of the pitch, yeah, it was a modeling school, and so you send your kids there and they teach them how to be. Who was that little girl, the Binet something?
Yeah, in Colorado.
They teach him to. Yes. Yeah, they teach him to be little Cupid dolls and.
Mm-hmm.
But the photos that they were using in these ads were very seductive, and you know, and we turned those ads down because they were just they bordered on child porn. I'll be honest
mm-hmm.
with you.
What are you doing now that you're out of the newspaper business?
I trade stocks. And
well, that's kind of hazardous. And
live on my pension.
Oh, okay. you mean you're a day trader? I mean, do you actually trade?
I wouldn't say. I don't trade like I used to trade. There was a time when I was, you know, I traded a whole lot of stocks every single day, but no, I gave that up in the 90s, you know.
Just
back
in time.
It was a different animal back then, because I remember like in 99, I think I had in my margin account, I had like maybe $60,000-$70,000, right? And I leveraged that into like $7 million in trades every year.
Hmm.
That gives you an idea of the excess. And they let you do this. They let you do this without, you know, just go for it, you know.
and that's
so
when you were making multiple trades per day?
I was making on average
multiple
10 trades
per
a day,
hour.
You know. I was hitting them, you know. It was bing bang, you know. It was a constant thing, and the markets fluctuated so dramatically. Remember, we were dealing with the Nasdaq, and these stocks just would fluctuate 5-10% over the course of a day's time. You never
right.
knew if they were going to end up or down. I had no idea. You know.
And you didn't care.
And no, we didn't care.
No, you were just trading. You don't care what the long run, whether the company thrives or not.
I didn't give a shit what they sold. I didn't make any difference.
Hey, you know, that's just, I want to just change the subject a little while. I have you on the line from Cincinnati. What shot do we have at a full public option?
What did you say?
What shot do we have in the healthcare business at a full public option?
Oh,
the public option that Obama's talking
yeah.
about? Well,
I'd
it's
like
kind of a theoretical idea. You know, it's a theoretical idea. It hasn't been fleshed out. I have no idea what it's going to look like
yeah.
or what the coverage would be or what the choices.
I'd
you know what the price range of the
it,
choices would be.
You know.
All I know is that I like the general concept. I think it could be made to work, and I firmly believe that the private insurance companies have no interest in insuring everybody. If they did, they would be actively talking about how they were going to do it.
And yeah, exactly.
They just want to insure people like me who've never been in a hospital in their life.
That's right. You're the only kind
of
person they want.
Look, it's
but
been
as soon
going,
as I get sick, they don't want me anymore.
That's right. That's
this
called
has
a
been
business
going
plan.
On with, it's been going on with auto insurance for as long as they've been around. Companies
True.
Like Geico. Geico only insures good drivers. You get a moving violation, you're out of here. They won't
uh-huh.
renew you.
That's how they do it.
They don't
the
tell you.
People.
The little gecko doesn't tell you that.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah, that little, yeah, that goddamn Australian lizard. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's
please,
all right.
Please.
That's all right.
Please, the CIA may
I
be listening.
No, the CIA is listening. Let's get over that maybe.
Well, you know, in the auto insurance industry, they've had to solve it. There's different states solve it different ways, but they have insurance pools required by law that the insurance companies set them up for people who are high-risk drivers.
Yeah.
Well, you know, let's just remember one thing. Insurance basically is a Ponzi scheme.
No.
I mean, it just is.
No.
Well,
it works if everybody is involved. And it's a scheme for pooling risk.
Right. I've been trying to tell him this for a long time. Thank you.
And if everybody puts their share in, everybody doesn't require payouts.
Yeah.
So there's a theoretical way of figuring out what it should cost if everybody's involved.
Well, the problem is it becomes a Ponzi scheme when they try to take a profit out of it.
Well, this is the thing. It's not a. It's
just a business.
You want to compare it to a paramutual. So we know the odds on each event happening, which horse is in a place where, all of that.
Right.
Now, let's say I skim 10% off the pool, off the top.
Which
okay,
the track
that would be your
group.
Right. Now, everybody's not getting the correct payout. So it's more like a casino or paramutual where, you know, they're skimming. But a
it's
Ponzi
made off with
animal.
Moderation is what
yeah.
it is.
Yeah, you know. I mean, I know you're
it's
using
It's made
Ponzi
off
schemes.
With moderation.
I don't
buy any of this. I think it's not a Ponzi scheme.
Okay.
I mean, if think about life insurance. You know.
Yeah, your
Ponzi
best you're not
certain.
Yeah. See, a Ponzi scheme is a scam.
Life insurance,
your
bet
these
you're
going to
die.
No, you bet you're going to die later.
You only win if you die, and they take
your
money.
But everybody who owns life insurance wins, or at least somebody does.
Oh.
But it's pooled risk for. And you're betting on the timing of the event.
Yeah. You can buy mutual funds now that buy life insurance. I mean, they buy the policies from the
They'll
owners.
They'll buy the policies, absolutely, right.
Yeah. Okay, maybe I'm just a simpleton from the left side of the aisle. But, you know, anything that can't meet its obligations to everyone at once is Ponzi.
No, well, that would include
everybody.
Everybody doesn't get sick at once.
Everybody shows up at the bank on the same day the bank goes bump. And it just all exploded in this latest frenzy of risk. Oh, wait a minute. I got another call.
This is crazy talk.
Oh, anyway, 415, you're on with the crew. Is Norm talking crazy tonight? What's your opinion?
I guess we bring out the best in you.
Hey, this is Steven out in San Francisco. Can you guys hear me?
We can hear you fine, Steven.
Oh, look at that. Hello,
Norm.
Oh, Norman.
My God. Is that Steven?
It is.
Second cousin.
Okay.
Or first cousin once removed or something.
I called in to hear meatballs, and I'm carrying Ponzi.
Yeah. Well, Norman
asserted that health insurance is nothing but a Ponzi scheme.
The Vatican is running a Ponzi scheme, and they can't save all those souls at the same time, you know.
Well, there's a way station called Purgatory,
and
they come later.
So, Steven, do you have the meatball recipe?
I have the recently published updated one. via email, and I have nothing to contribute to it because I've never cooked anything like that in my life.
Well, you've never tasted them either. It's worth a try.
That's right. Did you ever, I was going to say, did Stephen ever have a chance to taste one of her meatballs?
Well, you know, Dad, hold on. I did because we visited the house in Buffalo on a couple of those occasions, and there were definitely spaghetti dinners, and they were cooking away in the kitchen and making that sauce, but I was far too young to really remember it. It was just all great.
Are we talking about your mom's meatballs?
No, I'm talking about great-grandma Rose's.
No, we're talking about my grandmother's meatballs.
Oh, now I didn't have
those. It'd be Stephen's great-grandmother.
Yeah, there was one visit to the house in Buffalo where there were many people there, and there was a bunch of cooking going on in that kitchen, and it was definitely a spaghetti meatballs dinner. I distinctly remember it. I was too young to really appreciate it.
You know, my father hated cheese, but Grandma insisted that he had to have cheese on his macaroni. Well, he wouldn't eat it, so you know what she used to do? She would put it on and then cover it with the sauce to make him eat it.
Oh,
he was 50 years old.
Oh, she was still playing tricks on him when he was 50?
Oh, absolutely.
God,
she was
what a tyrant. What a tyrant he was.
Absolutely. Absolutely,
now,
she was a tyrant.
Who else is on this call? Is it totally
Well,
open?
we have Cincinnati, and we have an old friend of mine who is actually living in Sacramento now, who I spent my late teens and 20s with on some escapades.
And Paul's still on the line, isn't he?
No, Paul left. He went to go run, I don't know, he said he had to go run 20 miles or something. He's a marathoner now.
Yes, he mentioned that in an email to me. That's too bad. I feel sorry for him.
He's coming to Washington to run in the Marine Corps in October. Maybe it's November.
Yeah.
I never remember where it is. But I was actually on a big hike yesterday. We went on a field trip to the Bull Run Nature Conservancy, and that was really great fun.
Oh, in Virginia?
So there was I never knew all the details, but we went to this great graveyard that Chapman family was they owned a mill that was right here near Manassas. And Thoroughfare Gap. But Stonewall Jackson had gone on one of his forays. And he got trapped in Manassas just before Second Bull Run, or Second Manassas, as they say in the Confederacy. But anyway, and so General Lee and the Army of Northern Virginia was coming through Thoroughfare Gap to try to link up with him so that they could attack Washington. And a guy named General Ricketts tried to stop Lee from connecting up with Jackson. And at this Bull Run Nature Conservancy, there's a quarry. And the Union actually walked right into a trap, and he slowed him down a little bit, but Lee slaughtered him. And then he was able to link up with Jackson, and they won Second Manassas.
That's right. Is that close to Chancellorsville at all? Because that's where Jackson ended up being shot by his own men by accident.
No, it's not near Chancellorsville's in. It's not in Virginia. It's in.
Yes, it is.
Is it in Virginia?
Yes. Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know, when I watch the History Channel now and you know, the more recent versions of the Gettysburg battle and all that, they make Lee out to be a total idiot. I mean,
well, he was.
His rep is really more down there.
He was an 18th century general.
Well, he made some bad decisions that resulted in that Gettysburg defeat for the Confederate
Army. Turning around and attacking instead of defending.
Yeah,
and charging uphill. Wow, there's a
right. It wasn't a good idea to proceed with that battle, but I think he felt he had to.
Well, you know, somebody showed me a real interesting thing.
He should have turned around and retreated.
Regrouped.
That's right. Chancellorsville's at Spotsylvania County, Virginia.
Right.
But you'd be amazed, my experience in the Army is you'd be amazed how many officers have no regard at all for their people. I mean, and they can't think ahead to the next battle. They just don't do that. When you play chess with an officer in the Army, he'll fight you down to the last pawn, even though he's totally lost. You play an NCO, the NCO will resign when he's supposed to resign.
<That's>
he spares the troops.
That's not true of all officers, but maybe a fair number.
Yeah, I know. But when you're dealing, like General Patton. Patton was like that. Patton would sacrifice anything for his objective.
Well, you could say the same of Grant.
I suppose.
Grant had a strategic purpose. He knew that he had more men, he could wear down Lee and win.
Right. Well, you know, speaking of Patton, my favorite Patton quote was always, quotation was, remember, you don't win wars dying for your country. You win wars making the other stupid bastard die for his.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, he did a lot of things that, let's just say, he had the highest casualty rate of anybody. He was not someone, you did not want to be in his army. We'll just put it that way.
Well, anyway, hey, look, everybody, I got one great book here to add to my list, A Traitor to His Class. I said I was going to talk about books tonight, so does anybody have a book you can add to my list? Something you've read recently?
Well, I've done my duty. I added a book I've half read recently.
I'm really excited about that. I love the title, A Traitor to His Class.
FDR was, I think, it was, where did he come from? That's what this title means. It just doesn't make sense that he was the way he was, given his upbringing.
Or maybe he was just smarter than everybody else. And, what would have happened if he hadn't become president?
I hate to think of it. We would have just. It would have been like just like the Republican idea of just let's just wait and this thing will just be it'll work itself out.
You can call him a traitor to his class. On the other hand, he firmly believed that he was preventing insurrection, revolution. He was terrified of the socialist movement in labor. And you can read back on that, and all of everything he says revolves
Who was the United Mine Worker president?
John L. Lewis.
He hated him.
Yeah.
John L. Lewis got money from the Nazis.
And he firmly believed that if he didn't do all these things that he did, that there would be a similar situation to perhaps what we had in Germany or
yes,
Russia.
I think you're absolutely right about that.
There was a lot of turmoil in Europe and all over the world, after World War I and the Depression. So, do I think he was still an elitist, a capitalist? Hell yes.
Yes. In most ways. In some ways, for example, the business of the electrification of the country.
Mm-hmm.
He really didn't think that this should be left to private utility companies.
Yeah.
He thought that was a public enterprise.
Yeah.
Or was he right?
Well, the way water, the way water.
Well, it turned out to be it's half and half. But
TVA
model was a model that he liked.
Right.
Well, what I want to know, speaking of the TVA model, Mr. Obama and his Congress really want to do something, they should have a TVA-like project to make free wireless across the country.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I like it too.
Expensive.
It doesn't cost very much at all.
Now, Google has done that out here in Mountain View. And,
really?
Yeah, and it is a very wide area. It's the whole area between where their compound is and most of downtown Palo Alto, Mountain View, the Stanford campus, et cetera. It's a 802.11n or whatever. It's the newest state-of-the-art broadband wireless, and they're carrying about 30 times more data on their network than the AT&T 3G network in the same area. So just to show you how effective it is. Yeah, you can look it up. It's the Google Wireless project down in Mountain View, and they have an adjacent project that's been trying to get off the ground and meeting with massive political resistance in San Francisco. Some of my friends are trying to push through the mayor's office. And
That's really interesting because I've put my job sort of on the line. I've just taken the school I'm at. We're now Google Apps school.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's a good move for at the moment.
There's actually a lot of inside resistance to it.
Well, I think basically the lesson in short is if you have a very enlightened kind of dictatorship like Google is, and they take a project and they get it done without any resistance whatsoever, it will turn out beautifully, and then there's some proof that it can work. But even, you know, only 30 minutes north drive time in San Francisco, the same exact project has run into such political resistance and hurdles that it's dead in the water so far. So
what kind of what is the resistance to it?
The resistance is, I guarantee you, there's a list as long as my entire body. The top items are combinations of things like it shouldn't be in the public domain, the cable companies resisting, throwing money at people on the council to get in the way of it. It's very, very threatening to the existing carriers, right? And so the idea of the public broadband network is a terrifying thing. The proof of how terrifying it is the data throughput on the Google network down the bay. So the more interesting thing that might come of this, I guess, in closing, is that obviously Google is a well capitalized monster company these days, and they're interested in the idea of rolling these networks out on a profit basis everywhere, just directly competing with all the people that are in their way at the political table. So might be that's the way that it happens.
Okay, well, that's interesting. Well, you know what, everybody? I got about 2 minutes left.
I have two books for you.
Okay.
In closing.
Fire away.
All right. I dropped in. You were talking about healthcare. There's a wonderful medical doctor here in the Bay Area named Len Saputo, another good Italian. It's S-A-P-U-S, as in Sam, A-P-U-T-O, Saputo.
Yeah.
First name Len, and his new book is called A Return to Healing, Radical Healthcare Reform and the Future of Medicine. And it is probably the best clean read I've had from a doctor on how to fix not the healthcare insurance system, but healthcare in the country. And, you know, it starts with things like proper diet and all sorts of prophylactic care, pre-care, and then you know, frugality and all sorts of other wonderful things like all the doctors in this family practice over the years for you know, many decades. And so it's a great book. That's a nice
so
nice
I
one.
Get so I get the second book in the archive. Can you just give me it real quick?
The second book.
Yes.
Ron Paul's just published it. It's called End the Fed. And
yes.
Oh, I heard him talking about that.
Yes.
And the Fed. I heard him talking about that book on Joe Scarborough.
Obviously, he's the clarion call for that crusade and the clarion caller. And so now he actually has a book out defining not only the history of this beast called the Fed, but why it should be abolished and why it would be nice for all of us Americans to have control of our currency again. So that would be my recommendation there.
Okay, Ron Paul and the Fed. All right. Hey, everybody. It's been a great, great 60 minutes, and that's all we have for now. So come on back next week and join in with the Norm at Night Show. And remember, every time you make that insurance premium payment, it's like giving money to Madoff.
All right. Good night, everyone.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Hey, thank you for the calls, guys. San Francisco and Cincinnati. That was just great. You have no idea, and it's going to make me go find out about the meatball recipes now. I haven't been on that account in 2 weeks because of all these Google ads stuff.
Go to it.
But
somebody has to try it.
Yes,
right,
absolutely.
Send me a copy of that recipe. I'll try it out. You'll have an independent.
Okay.
Okay, it's there,
and,
Norman.
And hey, Cole, don't forget, send me some more Wyatt Kiss. Oh, God, I'm having brain failure.
Okay, well, at your age, this is,
don't
be
stop it.
What do you want us to send you? I thought this was free.
No, I want the meatball recipe, do you want some music?
Yeah, I want some of that. Yes, I want some of
Max Rabe.
Yes, Max Rabe. I couldn't think of his name.
There you go. See, I can call this
in
right
fact,
out of
you. All right.
Thought,
enough.
Think about Rabe. We'll go out of here on his music.
Okay, very good.
Okay, good.
See you later, Norm.
Bye, right, everybody.
Bye. See you next week. Good show, guys.
Why, thanks, just give me a ring. The stupid telephone is silent like a stone.
I got a lot tonight, but the great show. Thanks, Tom.
Why does no one call?
Norman, I'm
getting the idea. I'm sitting in the clear.
I'm out of here. Norm is gone tonight. Everybody's off the line. And we had a great show. Lots of bad habits.